four instruments. There's a digital piano in there now.
Arts and Crafts Dungeon is a place where you torture arts and crafts?
That's hauntingly accurate, yes.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm also building a robot.
Yeah, I've seen your posts. They're a little worrisome.
Yeah, yeah.
At what point do you seek help?
Not yet.
Okay.
I need to wait until there are piles, I believe. And right now I have stacks.
Is piles, isn't that another name for shingles?
I don't have that, but my I understand that I am susceptible to it, having had chicken pox in the past.
Yeah. A chicken pox on both your houses. I think that's how
rude.
That works.
I'm pretty sure that's how that goes. Oh, am I monitoring? No, I'm not. I have nothing. I got nothing.
Nothing?
Nothing.
I'm pretty sure.
I can hear myself.
Oh, I hear everyone except me.
Yeah. Turn me up in my headphones.
Wait, turn my headphones up.
Is this where we...
Say something. Yes, I'm saying something. I kind of hear myself, I think.
I hear you.
Ooh, I got a little stereo split.
All right, I'm so. Ooh, there I am. Boy, there I am.
So dulcet.
Wait, I don't hear me now.
Ooh.
There I am.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Ooh.
There you go. I'm getting it. It's happening. Oh, my God.
Wait, so I have a bass question.
Yeah, bass question.
How hard is it to go from, like, I know treble clef really well. How hard is it to read bass music?
I don't read music anymore at all, so I have no idea.
We don't call it bass music. We call it trap music now.
Oh.
I got nothing.
Yeah.
I wish I had a drum machine here so I could insert a bunch of hi-hats.
Because you'd give me the hi-hat?
No, I don't get it.
It's a Miller's Crossing. Well, it's a 30s. Colloquialism.
It is. I still haven't seen Miller's Crossing. I watch Coen Brothers movies when I get on planes.
Mm-hmm.
I watched Fargo and Barton Fink last time I flew to Boston.
Okay. Endorsed. Both endorsed.
Yep.
I haven't seen either of those.
I have a real tragic relationship story. Do you want to hear that? About?
Yeah, let's go. Oh my God.
This is the show, right?
Yeah, this is the show.
When my last relationship was breaking up, one of the reasons it broke up, one of the many reasons. Anyway, there was a gesture from my ex. I had always complained that there was not a Coen Brothers box set on DVD because I really wanted one.
Yes.
And she made one. She put together this really lovely, like, little cardstock box and labeled it Coen Brothers box set and put every DVD in there. Awesome gesture.
That's like the sweetest.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's nice.
Not too little, too late, because it was a lot, but it was definitely too late. And it was just the most gorgeous thing. And I had all my Coen Brothers movies finally. And then I moved them out here. And Katrina was like, are you going to keep that? And I was like, that's a really good question.
Because it is a really good question.
Constant reminder of like this attempt to grab stuff back. But anyway, so I love the Coen Brothers movies. But now they have this even more melancholy, emotional story behind them for me.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
So there you go.
That's good. Today on the program, we have one Stephen Fox, and he's going to tell us about relationship stories and emotions and something else. Steph?
Oh, writing for the web.
Ooh.
Because this is a design podcast.
Nominally a design podcast. Yes, for, you know, websites and such. Stephen Fox is a professional writer, would you say?
Okay. Yes.
Okay, good.
You seemed hesitant.
Well, I am getting paid to write words, so yes, that I think that's the definition of a professional at this point.
Technically true.
Yes.
Technically true. The best kind of true. So who pays you?
Right now, Twitter pays me.
Mm-hmm.
And they pay me not in tweets, which is good.
That's nice.
Yeah, that is good.
I've discovered those to be relatively low value on the market.
I can help you with that.
Can you? That's kind of neat.
They pay you in extra characters?
I'm not allowed to talk about that.
Ooh. Stephen gets 147 characters per tweet.
Damn.
Well, I'm a smaller person, so I can fit more in the compose box.
We're just evening out the playing field here.
Right. Like Tony Robbins, he has fewer characters because he's so large.
He is large. He's large.
Big hands. Presidential hands.
Oh, yeah. Big old grasping hands. The grasping hands of a true American.
It's getting weird.
It's so
I'm
weird
feeling
already.
Real weird. I need you to bring it home here.
Oh,
Steph.
I need to, oh man. Okay, so let's get to business. This is Let's Make Mistakes. This is the program you're listening to.
Uh-huh.
And we have Stephen Fox from Twitter here.
Yes.
To talk to us about writing on the web. Mike is not here.
So I'm playing the part of a curmudgeon today?
Yes. Or, mm-hmm. Okay. Just anything we say. Don't like it.
I'm old.
There you go. That's good.
All right.
I can really hear the beard. Just rustles slightly. Anyhow, we decided that we would really, Steph decided, because Steph is good at making decisions and I'm just very distractible. Steph decided it might be a good idea to talk to someone who is a writer of words on the internet and a person who understands the power of words, especially in light of interesting things happening with words on the web these days, especially on Twitter. Steph, will you elaborate a little?
So, I don't know, maybe this is only Bay Area that cared about this, but the SF Bart Twitter was amazing and so relatable and on point and genuine about the actual problems in the system. Mm-hmm. And everyone was really, really stoked on it until other government agencies tried to talk to kids like Brandsay and Bay. I'm thinking of the Department of State, the passport. Like, if you're not a 10 in the United States, you're not a 10 abroad.
Woof.
Yeah. So, I'm just kind of curious, like, how do you, I don't know. How do you write in a genuine way that people respond well to? And
I think you nailed it in the question. Like, you have to be genuine. Like, you have to talk about things you know about. You have to talk about them in a way that you know and hope that your audience will receive them. You know, my path to Twitter has been, you know, years in the making. I feel like for a long time I was knocking on that door and saying, like, I want to work for this company, but it took them being at the right place in their existence and me being in the right place and like what I had already done. We finally kind of came together at the right time. Like when I wrote for Oracle for a while, and one thing that they wanted to do was create a social network for people who were using Oracle. But that was a huge lift. We had to create this place and then entice them to come there so that they could hear us talk to them and they could talk to each other. And we learned the hard way, like, nobody's going to come to a social network that is created by Oracle because they're already on other ones. Yeah. What we found was if we went to the places where they were and talked to them about the things they were already interested in and having conversations about, that was working out a ton better for us. We weren't seeing a real one-to-one, you know, words into dollars idea, but people were finding that they could go to whatever the Facebook page that we created and have a conversation, and somebody from Oracle could weigh in at the right point and say, like, hey, we can help you with that or whatever. So it's knowing where your audience is and what kinds of conversations they're already having there. So I think like the Bart example is amazing because people, you know, take to Twitter to complain about service interruptions. Yeah. And they had empowered somebody on their Twitter handle to go in there and take care of that. So I think it's two things. It's knowing that that audience was there and then trusting the people that have the access, the keys to your, you know, ad handle essentially to speak for you. And that's not a job that you should or could give to an intern all the time.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, a lot of, I think people have kind of evolved in this thinking, which is great. But I know early days of like social media strategy, they would just put the young person on the Twitter account and that would just turn into, you know, a complete, like an other shit show sometimes. Like, mm-hmm. there's deleted tweets and now we have to apologize and now there's a blog post and now there's a whole kerfuffle that our actual PR person has to get involved in. You know, there should be a communication strategy, not just a social strategy that goes into the things that end up on Twitter. It should be part of a broader plan. Sometimes it's an end all be all. Like we have a Twitter strategy that is, you know, that does certain things for brands and companies and people even. I know, you know, some of our friends work on their personal brand all the time. And Twitter is an aspect of that, but it's part of a more cohesive story that people should be telling about themselves and the conversations they're having with people.
My personal brand is something that goes on cows.
I understand that.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You know, they say you sell the sizzle, not the steak. I think that's the phrase.
Oh. Oh,
it's toasted.
We just went Mad Men.
Yeah, we did. Yeah. Just for a second. I had a Draper nap the other day. It was really nice.
So you were drunk in the office? Is that what you're saying?
Only a little.
Okay.
So people give their social media accounts to the intern. It goes badly. How do you, so you give someone access to your social media account, you as a company, you as mm-hmm. an organization, you're making them the voice of that organization. You're bestowing them the power to be like Metatron.
You're giving them the responsibility to represent your voice. Hopefully you've already thought about what your voice is by the time you hire somebody to start speaking in it. and you have documented that in some way that you can pass that on pretty seamlessly. You can say, here are our voice principles. Here is the way we talk. You know, I think it's even as specific as, yes, use contractions when you type words onto the internet.
Yeah.
Be relatable. Use words that, you know, our audience will understand. Yes, you can use this amount of jargon, but not go over that line. You know, it's kind of like being a comedian in a, like at a trade show. Like, you know which jokes are going to land and which aren't. And how broad you want to be with your message.
What I found really striking about the SF Art thing is it wasn't so much about the tweets anymore. It was like really eye-opening at how fucked the system is. It's like, wait a minute, it was only designed for 100,000 people a week and we're having 400, 500,000 a day.
Yeah,
like that's what people are talking about now is like how underfunded it is.
Exactly. And I think that part of that is like giving the person that has the responsibility to respond, making sure that they have the knowledge to respond in a way that's meaningful. I think it's a really excellent example of that happening with the BART account specifically.
Mm. And what makes Twitter a better platform for this to happen as opposed to anything else?
So now I'm shilling Twitter.
I guess a little bit.
It's fine. I mean, the reason I work there is because I love the place. Mm-hmm. I love the company. I obviously love the service. I think Twitter lowers the barrier of entry to have conversations. We're doing things now, which is going to keep lowering that barrier, which is pretty exciting to me. If you have a problem with, let's say, a local cable company.
Yeah.
I don't think like you're going to write a note to your mother and mail it off and be like, this X1 service or what, hypothetically, is not what I was expecting. You know, you're going to take to Twitter first, I think, to, you know, complain about it or to voice your dissatisfaction. Comcast specifically was one of the early adopters of Twitter in a kind of customer service way. That Comcast Cares handle was a brainchild of, I'm going to forget his name, and that's really sad because it's been a couple of years, but I think his name was Bill.
That sounds like a Comcast name. I think I've spoken to Bill's there.
He just kind of said, look, I'm going to take this responsibility on myself and I'm going to start responding to people. And there, while the sentiment about the company in general was not great at the time, they could see really measurable improvements on how people felt about how they were being dealt with on Twitter. Mm. You know, and then it became a case study, and then they started to kind of formalize the process, and now they have a staff that just takes care of people's complaints on Twitter. And I think that's great. That's exactly how that evolution should have happened. I think more, you know, brands, more customer service focused people should be looking at that and doing that. And, you know, hopefully we're building the right tools to get them to address customer concerns, whether those customers are avid Twitter users or not.
I remember when Comcast Cares started blowing up on Twitter because I complained about Comcast a lot, very frequently, because they sucked really badly. The interesting thing was they were very good. They got very good at placating me over Twitter without actually ever like addressing the problem. It was kind of great. It was kind of like perfect for them because they didn't really have to improve their service. And in fact, they could not. And so they didn't. But instead, they just addressed like they would be like, hey, we're going to try. We're going to help, which was nice. I mean, I wish they had just fixed their service to like cut off the me complaining thing to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I did feel heard, I guess, at least.
And, you know, to paraphrase that, knowing is half the battle. Like, that's from a customer service perspective, like, you want to make sure that somebody's at least listening. So when I have a complaint about a company and they say, you know, thank you for your feedback, you know, we'll look into that. That doesn't mean, I don't think that that's going to get on their, you know, product roadmap the next week. Mm-hmm. But at least like I've done something to register that complaint. Like I was telling somebody the other day, I was like, yes, you can complain about the election, but the moment politicians in general, the moment I find out that you don't vote, like we're done with that conversation because you're not doing anything to fix the problem. You're just out there complaining like, I don't like these, you know, these people that we've elected. Well, we didn't elect them because you didn't do anything to help kind of change that process. So it's kind of being part of the process and like saying, like, I have a voice in this now. Like Twitter gives me a voice to these people who until now have been nameless and faceless. But, you know, when I see people talking about like writing, you know, B2B copy, like that's embarrassing to me. Like, it's not business to business. You are a human being that's trying to connect with another human being. Like, no matter who it is, whether they're in a C-level office or not, that is a living, breathing person. Yeah. And if they're going to make a decision, you need to appeal to them in a way that's going to help them make a decision, especially if it's spending money. Like, find out what makes them tick and appeal to that in a way that is going to, you know, further your business interests or further your personal interests or whatever it is.
And so I always feel kind of gross when I complain on Twitter. I don't know. I just feel like a dick. I'm like being whiny about like, where's my Sephora package? But I had this problem where my Sephora package said it was attempted delivery like a week and just nothing. There were no like tags left on my on my doorstep. I didn't even know who was, you know, what the shipping company was. So I was on the phone with Sephora for like 2 hours and they're like, sorry, we can't really do anything about it. So I went through all their customer service means and I tried emailing and stuff. Finally, I go on Twitter. And I'm like, where the fuck is my package? Like, I need my detangling hairbrush. I needed it like 2 weeks ago.
That exists.
Oh my God, it's for children, but it's so good. It makes my hair so silky. So I do it on Twitter and 5 minutes later, they're like, we're issuing you a refund right now. And it's just like, why did we go through 2 weeks of like emailing and phone calls? And then on Twitter, you just got so upset. I found out it was OnTrack that just wasn't leaving tags at my door. And I kept trying to call them. So I tagged both Sephora and OnTrack in the Twitter message. Sephora got back to me in 5 minutes. OnTrack never said anything. So.
Yeah, fascinating. It's really interesting that Sephora in 5 minutes on Twitter could do something that in 2 hours on the phone they couldn't do.
And then now when I think about this like incident where my packages just went missing, I'm like, Sephora took care of it. They did a really good job. They were awesome. They gave me the refund. Fuck OnTrack. If I see a company uses OnTrack, I'm not ordering from
them. That's the other piece of this, which I wish more people were doing. Like, I feel like I owe Valencia Cyclery, you know, a complimentary tweet because like I complained one time that, you know, they screwed something up and I never went back and was like, you know what, Bill, I think his name is Bill. Everybody's name is Bill today.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
You know, they handled it really well. And I never went back to Twitter and was like, gosh, they really fixed this problem. And they went above and beyond when they fixed it. And
totally.
I feel like, you know, we're not doing enough of that. Like, we're not giving people enough of the tools. We broadly as a society, not we Twitter. We're not giving people the encouragement that we need to kind of praise in public as often as we complain in public.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So like, I like the idea that, you know, you went back and was like, yay, Sephora, you know, you still got a jab into OnTrack, but you know, they kind of deserved it. It seems like.
Kind of my enemy. So there's some like anti OnTrack Twitter accounts that flag anytime anyone uses like OnTrack in a tweet and they'll start retweeting all your negative experiences OnTrack. Like it seems to be like a group thing that everyone hates OnTrack.
Well, and I think that there's a, there's this mini audience of people who collect tweets about specific companies because they're so bad at responses. Like it's really apparent like who is paying attention and who isn't.
Yeah, it is.
One time I complained about, InVision and I had previously dealt with their support thing. Like I just tweeted something about InVision and they tweeted me this form tweet that was like, hey, like we're sorry you're experiencing this. Please email this to us. And so I at some point complained again. And I was like, ugh, InVision, this sucks. And no, I don't want to email you. And they tweeted at me, hey, we're sorry. Please
thank
email.
You for your second tweet.
I was like, Christ. So now I just don't complain about InVision.
Yeah.
Because they've trained me not to by being assholes.
But you're still trapped in a loop where you have to use their product and they probably haven't fixed it.
Yeah. Yeah. Now I have a guy on the inside, so that problem's taken care of. I have a mole.
Oh, are you joining that Slack channel?
Yeah, I'm in there and I'm not.
Have you had your mole looked at?
Man, that's a really good question. I actually have to write that down.
Wow, so this just turned into us complaining about companies. So.
A little bit.
But it's, I think
thank you for using Twitter.
Thank you for
the complaint platform.
No, but you do bring up a good point. There are times when I get really guilty of this where I realize like, wow, I only go on Yelp and Twitter when I bitch about stuff. So I'll go and write all the positive reviews for all my favorite restaurants on Yelp. I'll just spend an afternoon like, I'm just going to talk about how much I love BLTs.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
Contributing positively to that that thing. It seems...
Especially in the West Portal. I want all the mom-and-pop businesses to do well and be there to serve me BLTs all the time. So I want them to get good reviews.
It's interesting that we started talking about Twitter and almost immediately started talking about complaints.
That is interesting.
How else? What other... You're right. You know, what percentage of your tweets are complaint related? Or do you look at Twitter as a way to get those complaints addressed as quickly as possible? Like, I think that the conversation will naturally go there because you found it helpful in mm-hmm. resolving issues and tweeting about the bots and things that you tweet about.
That's true. And I think that's also kind of happenstance because back in the day before, there were support accounts on Twitter, I would be complaining on Twitter just because it's like, I think just the nature of Twitter's immediacy makes it really easy to say things that are like off the cuff reflections of things that are currently happening. And sometimes it's going to be like a particular emotional spike you'll have in your day is, this is annoying me.
Yeah.
And I think that Twitter, like, that's kind of an accident of Twitter's platform, that it happens to be good at capturing that kind of thing, and that makes it a good place for support to be.
But what's great, for, in my opinion, about the companies that are doing customer service right, specifically on Twitter, are the ones who will take your kind of dashed off tweet where you don't necessarily want somebody to come and resolve a problem, mm-hmm. but they'll see it and be like, hey, Liam, why is your day so shitty? Can we help and make it better? How can we help you make it better? Like, those are the companies that I think are, they're understanding what customer service means in general. They just happen to be doing it on Twitter. You know, they mm-hmm. could be using other platforms, but they at least, you know, because my perspective is very Twitter focused, like, I can see the ones that are doing it well there. I'm sure that there are companies that are doing it well on other platforms, but I don't think there's the immediacy that happens on Twitter anywhere else.
To Comcast's credit, they responded to me contextlessly, referring to them as garbage fuckers. So they figured out based on that there was a problem that they might be able to address.
The algorithm is working.
Yes. Something about the phrase garbage fucker just really gets straight into someone's support queue.
Did you hashtag it?
I should. I really should.
Can that be our show's hashtag? Is hashtag garbage fuckers?
Oh, please don't.
But then, I don't know, something I find interesting about Twitter is that, like, your number of followers becomes, like, social currency in a way. Like, I think a company might be more enticed to respond to you if you have, like, 100,000 followers as opposed to 40.
I know that was a concern early days, like, especially in the Comcast Cares days. When they first launched, there was a debate, I think it was out of South by Southwest that I went to, like, 2009 or 2010, where that was an actual topic of a conversation. Like, do you help fix the problem of somebody with 10,000 followers before you fix the problem of somebody with 10 followers? Because the sphere of influence that they'll have when they say, gosh, Comcast fixed my problem, will be greater. So from a, like, brand perspective and a, you know, PR perspective, yes, I think you do go after that problem. But if you're solving problems, if your job is to solve individual customer problems, it doesn't matter what your follower count is. It shouldn't matter. Like, your problem came in first, I'll solve yours. And then, you know, Mr. Garbage Fire over here, like, he can wait a bit because his tweet came in after yours and I can solve them as they come in. Sorry about your garbage fire.
No, it's okay. It's fine. Yeah, that makes sense. It's weird that Twitter can be both a place for support and marketing because those are so frequently at odds with each other.
And it can also be like a place for, as the user, as like complaining and also endorsing.
Is this where I get to disagree with you?
Sure.
Of course. This is what the show's about.
Why isn't, this is your first mistake. why isn't good customer service a form of marketing?
I think it is, but I think that if you're trying to fulfill both marketing and customer service at once, then you are going to be focusing on the high-profile things that'll make you look good rather than the low-profile things that won't make you look good.
But nothing's going to be better than your service being good.
That's true.
Right? Whether it's customer service or, like, the product or thing that you've purchased, like, that's the best marketing there is. Like, you built something that doesn't suck. And far from doesn't suck, it's actually great. And great goes into, like, all the aspects of what it is. Like, you can buy, let's say you buy a razor and it shaved you really well. But when you go back, like, the customer experience that you have to, like, replace it or buy blades or whatever that is so onerous that you're like, screw this, I'm never buying this brand again.
Yeah.
Like, I think that it's, you know, the widget or whatever you're making is just one piece of a broader customer experience. And when you talk about that with, you know, brands or marketing people, like good ones are going to say like customer service is part of this overall experience. And we need to get that right so that we can get the messaging right for the rest of the company. I worked for Symantec for 4 years. And mm-hmm. one of the biggest projects I took on before I left was a mobile, we went responsive with our Norton.com site. Mm-hmm. But that's not just like, you know, www.norton.com. It was the entire experience end to end. Like we had to make it fit on a mobile phone. We had to allow people to make a purchase of our product on a mobile phone. And that was just a complete rethinking of, you know, an end to end customer experience that nobody was, in my opinion, ready for when we started that discussion, but we got it done in a way that is much better than what it used to be. When we started to look at like what kinds of things should go in a mobile experience and how should we message that and where should we focus our efforts, one of the most interesting things that I had no idea we were going to fix were specific customer service concerns. Because we were having, we had a marketing team that was saying we need to address this point and this point and this point. We had a product team that was saying, make sure that this is on the website. So everybody was weighing in about what the site should say. And when we started to boil down like what they wanted to say, we started to ask, well, why are we saying this here? And sometimes the answer was, well, customer service gets a lot of calls about that. Mm-hmm. And so we said, well, let's fix that problem so that we don't have to message it in the front end of our website. Like, yeah. Let's talk to customer service and figure out what are the top 10 complaints that they get and see if we can just fix those. That way we don't have to put the number on the homepage anymore. Like, let's figure out, like, why are people calling customer service? Fix those problems first, and then we can focus on what people need to know when they're on their mobile phone.
So we're just taking the Band-Aid approach, like, oh, I'll just...
Yeah, instead of like, you know, I can't get the new version on my computer because of a known glitch or whatever it was. Yeah. Like, we would message that on the homepage. It's like, we know that this is a problem, blah, blah, blah. Sometimes, let's, you know, an example. But if we spent the time and effort to go to the product team and say, can we fix this before our next launch or, you know, can we address this? Like, it would take all of those calls out of the customer service queue. And then customer service didn't say, can you please put the number on the, you know, or not put the number on the website because we're getting too many calls about this one thing.
Yeah.
So I think customer service and marketing do potentially go hand in hand.
I agree.
Yeah. And I can think of a lot of instances where, like, I've used a garbage product and I've complained to customer care and been on the phone and I'm like, well, I'll probably use them again because they were like, so great. They fixed my problem.
The other place where, the other example I have for like marketing and the actual execution is a delivery company that rhymes with Red X. Mm-hmm. Back in the day, they you know, were absolutely positively delivered overnight or whatever the hell that was. Like, that marketing was everywhere, and that was your expectation. And when they failed to meet that expectation, which the numbers showed was, like, a ridiculously high amount of time.
Oh, God.
You were like, well, I just paid for this thing that should have been here this morning. Like, where is it? Like, that would infuriate you. So you have to make sure, like, whatever promises that marketing is making that you can pay off on. I mean, you don't have to. You could be, you know... Any ad exec is going to come in here and be like, we're the best, you know, but I think that that's why I think that like good marketing involves whatever that customer experience is paying off the promise that you have every time.
This is that genuineness previously talked about.
Definitely. Don't be liars.
Don't be liars. Or jerks. That's the other thing. Well, you go.
The Department of State thing, when they said the 10 out of 10, their response was they deleted the tweet and they said, we're sorry if it offended someone.
Yeah,
that's... It's like, we're not sorry. No. We're sorry if you're offended.
We're sorry you didn't get our really highbrow joke.
Lol. Yeah, I hate that. I'm sorry you feel that way. That's like the most dick thing you can say.
By the way, if I can count to 10 in Spanish, does that count? Like, if I go to Spain, am I still a 10 in España? Yeah.
What were you going to say, Liam?
I have a thought.
But... Oh, do tell.
Okay. I don't know if this makes any sense or not. I'm having a weird day. So we all like the SF Bart thing. They were very genuine and truthful about what they were talking about and very straightforward. They were being genuine. Mm-hmm. But they were being genuinely truthful and genuinely open and genuinely... kind and empathetic. Can you, is there a value prop? Is there like a value to genuineness? Can you genuinely be an asshole? Like maybe you're genuinely an asshole and being genuine is not the thing that you want.
Well, then what do you, I mean, are you selling asshole?
Some people might be.
Then sure, go for it.
I guess the question is like, how do you.
What if the personality you're trying to portray is not the actual personality of the person that's.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Like, how do you define the personality of like a mouthpiece for a larger organization and define that in such a way that even someone who does not necessarily have all those same values can be effective?
Okay. So going back to like the mechanics of being a writer, like mm-hmm. I think if you are a decent writer, you can take on the qualities of somebody else's voice. You should be able to look at a voice document and mimic it.
What's a voice document?
Well, hopefully you have one as a, like, if you are a branded organization,
uh-huh. yeah.
you have gone through a process that not only lays out like what your color palette is and what your logo looks like and how much, you know, padding needs to be around the bird or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You also have a document that talks about how you talk to people and the kinds of things that you say to them and how you say them. And then I think there's another level of that. Like, yes, we are conversational, we are clever, but you also have to go through and say, we're not always those things in every scenario.
Mm-hmm.
Like being clever in help document is not the right place to be clever. I remember getting an email from a shoe delivery service, we'll say, when my shoes were late.
Yeah.
And they told me that my delivery was late because some ninjas had taken over their warehouse.
Oh my God.
Oh,
and I was like,
God.
Okay, I understand that you have a brand document that says, talk about ninjas, be cute, be funny, be humorous. But when I want to know where the hell my shoes are, I don't give a crap about like these fictitious, I'm assuming, ninjas that came into your warehouse. Like
yeah.
that's not the time to be like fully branded in your communication email. So you should have a scenario, you should build in scenarios in your voice document where you can say like, there are some sensitive topics when people are in a different emotional state than you would approach them every other day, where you should talk to them this way instead. And having that big picture idea in your head and planning for it is going to be a lot more, it's going to be a lot better for you in the long run if you spend some time and really go after that as you're setting up your branding and your voice documents so that you're prepared if something does go wrong.
Yeah.
Striking the wrong tone is much more damaging than getting the tone almost right most of the time. Like nobody's going to be like, you know, they used a contraction there and I wasn't expecting it. Nobody's going to care about that. But when you tweet about a shoe sale in the context of riots in Egypt, like somebody's going to call you out on that and be like, look,
yeah.
you guys really missed it here. And you're not prepared to be an adult in an adult conversation.
Wow, this is like cracking up. I have like three things I want to talk about all at once. I don't know.
Start with
one of them.
One of them, yeah.
Okay, so I really hate getting super insensitive holiday emails mm-hmm. from companies. Like there was something on Columbus Day. It was like, all products, $14.92 and up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's really, really racially insensitive.
Yeah,
Columbus was a bad person.
Here's your 9/11 sale. Like
yeah.
everything is $9.11. Like there's just, I mean, we're not going to be able to like strip the internet of stupidity. I think we've proven that over and over. And, you know, not every marketing idea is one you should go after, you know? But when you get something like that, how do you react? And like, how do you want that remedied? I think is, you know, I'll ask you that. And then like, what could that company do to you to kind of do for you or with you to win you back over?
Well, I mean, usually it's not super, I mean, I find it offensive. Usually what I do is I take a screen cap and I tweet it, like, to be totally honest. But it's just like, run your idea past a second person to be like, will this piss anyone off? Like, maybe
run your idea past a person that doesn't look and sound just like you
exactly.
is another way to do it.
Right.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah.
We can't fully counteract the stupidity on the internet. Can we reduce it? Do you think it's possible for stupidity to trend downward? For hurtfulness and jerkiness and vapidness to trend downward?
I've lived in San Francisco now 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
So this is going to start to sound like, oh my gosh, San Francisco's really turned him. But like, I'm almost reluctant to say, like, you have to be the change you want in the world. Like, mm-hmm. It's kind of that idea. Like when I mentioned earlier, like, go ahead and praise companies that are doing things right.
Yeah.
Like, there needs to be more of that. I believe that. I fail at it constantly. So I don't practice what I preach, but I know that I should. When somebody does a good job with something, we should be talking about that as often or more often than we complain about things. But we don't need, the reason we complain is because we're taking to these tools to get remedies to our problems most of the time. And if something is going great, you don't need a remedy. Like, it's going great. So it just becomes like boastful, like, hey, look, I'm a middle-aged white man on the internet that's having a great day. Like, surprise, no shit. Like, why wouldn't you? So, you know, there's a fine line between like boasting about like the immense privilege that I've been lucky enough to experience, at the same time saying like there are good things that happen in the world to people and we should be talking about them. Now, that's not everybody's experience on the internet, far from it. It's not everybody, it's definitely not everybody's experience on Twitter. You know, we have work to do to help, like, we as a populace have work to do to help make not just the internet a better place, but like, you know, let's do things that kind of improve people's lives in a way that you find meaningful. Like, I'm not going to be prescriptive and be like, you should go like help clean up the alley back here. You know, you need to find what's, mm-hmm. not that it's a mess, but
it is.
People throw things out the windows.
No, our neighbors, they throw things out the windows, like food they don't want. So that's why there's always food scraps in front of Mule. Like once I was sitting out there and someone
I
threw-
I thought that was your catered lunch.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Someone threw an entire TV dinner. Like they took a bite of it and went like, oh, that sucks, and threw it. And then an Uber ran it over. And I was like, what the fuck is my
that
life?
That is such a metaphor for something.
It was a beautiful 10-second tableau. It was like a vine.
I bet Abraham Lincoln had something to do with it.
Probably.
And Christopher Columbus walked by.
Right.
Christ.
It's real
so,
weird.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that everybody has the capacity is the wrong word for it. I think people have a responsibility to try and make their life better. And if that culminates in helping others, which I think it should, great. But if the helping others is like finding a way for your kids to eat their next meal, like that's it. That's the thing. That's what you're focused on. And I'm not going to be the person to tell you that you need to help, you know, feed other people's kids or other people in another country before you take care of your own. Like your response, like you have to put the oxygen mask on yourself before you can help others. Like, so if you can help others, then do it.
You have such a message of kindness and beauty. This is a unusually positive show for us.
Sorry. Yes. I really failed on the filling in for Mike.
No, that's okay.
I have to look at the world from that perspective because mm-hmm. otherwise I would be in a ball on a corner.
Yeah.
There is so much, you know, like there are so many shitty things going on that I have to be able to focus on where I can make a change elsewhere. Otherwise, I'm distracted by the shit show.
The shit show is distracting. It's a show, after all.
This is making me feel so much happier. I just feel like I just got a hug, like a vocal hug right now.
Vocal hug. Hashtag audio hug.
So one of the things, the many things that I wanted to talk about is, do you think truthfulness is a trap sometimes? I'm just thinking of a particular I know. Okay, this has got depressing.
No, you're laying it down. I'm excited.
We talked about your nice thing. Let's talk about my shitty thing.
Well, I think it's interesting that we bring it. Like, what happens to that BART account in 3 months? Like, you can't keep saying we're not built for this because people are going to get tired of that song pretty soon. We understand you're not built for this. What are you doing to fix it? Like that's the next step in part, you know, specifically. But like when you are armed with the tools to accurately convey what reality is for people, like from a customer service perspective, like, you know, UPS a couple of years ago didn't deliver all their packages by Christmas when they promised.
Yeah.
Like that, they handled it online. Okay. They let people know, but what they didn't do was like fix the problem for the next year, in my opinion, because it happened to me again, then the very next year. So you can say whatever you want customer service-wise, but until you go back and like correct that core issue that people complained about and that you handled really well,
yeah,
like then you're still going to be, you know, kind of screwed when the shit hits the fan again.
The thing I'm thinking of is I got totally random credit card charge. Mm-hmm. And it was from a store, like an actual physical brick and mortar store I went to probably 9 months prior. So I contacted them and they gave me an email address and I was having the exchange. And what ended up happening is that I used my sister's club card and she doesn't have an online account. So what they had done is they had stored my credit card from 9 months prior without my consent.
Wow.
And just automatically charged when her membership came due because she didn't have one stored.
Mm-hmm.
So they gave me the refund, no problems asked. But this like customer service representative told me all of this. And I was like, wow, this is really, really highly illegal. Like, you are being very truthful and being very honest and open with me, but at the same time, are you incriminating yourself? So I haven't really known what to do about that.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to my sister, like, this is super illegal. And she's like, yeah, like, that makes me uncomfortable. Let's pay with cash, like, anytime we go there. So they don't have info on us. So how much do you empower your customer service representatives to know so that they aren't giving you away when you're doing something sketch?
Well, but
like,
I mean,
yeah.
And there's nothing like, you know, do you use that power to say like, hey, you guys need to fix this? Like, do you take to Twitter or wherever and say like, hey, this thing just happened to me. You guys need to fix this. Or like, do you talk to the customer service rep and tell them, you know, like, hey, this is an awful experience. Like, what are you doing internally to say like, how many of these calls are you handling a week?
Yeah.
What are you guys doing to fix it? Like there's, you know, in my opinion, there's two ways to go after it, but yeah, they should fix that obviously. But is she empowered enough? Like going back to the Bart example, like he can have access to all this information, but does he have any power at that point to say like,
yeah,
here are the things that people are, they want addressed sooner rather than later. Like, can we escalate these into whatever our future growth plans are? Or like, can she meet with her manager and be like, 40% of my calls this week were about this problem. Can we fix this problem? You know, and that's kind of an organizational issue to be able to not only empower your employees to respond to people, but then to like raise those concerns in a manner that they can be fixed in the future.
And then also, I think a lot of people managing these accounts or the email addresses, they don't have the power to institute change, but I also don't want to shoot the messenger, right? Like, I don't want to go off on them. I want to talk to the company at a higher level, and I don't want to get them involved or get them fired because they said too much. But it's like this like tricky thing. Like, what do I do in this situation?
That is tricky.
Yeah, I don't want her to lose her job. Like, she's great. She fixed the problem, but she gave away something bigger about the company.
But those are the people, like, honestly, you would want fixing other people's jobs. Like,
yeah,
they were honest with you. They made you feel like you were heard.
Yeah, and I really do hope that there, in those cases, that there is some sort of like organizational way for feedback to make it into a product or make it into a way that a company comports itself. And sometimes I think, especially in the Bart situation, like the way forward after being truthful about what a shit show Bart is not clear, because I mean they have so much infrastructure to improve and so much, and I mean they don't have the money to do it. And so I wonder what you do in that situation. Like, you can be truthful about having a problem, but I mean if the reality is that there is no easy fix for the problem and there is no fix forthcoming, like
what happens next?
Yeah,
well, and that would be like maybe a thought experiment for Bart is,
mm-hmm,
you know, like, what do we want our riders who are upset to do next? How can they help us improve the experience? Like, let's come up with a plan and see if we can implement it together. Like, let's partner with all these people who complain. Let's create, you know, a public service campaign or some sort of action so that the people that can help us fix our problems, whether it's politicians who are holding the purse strings,
mm-hmm,
or like construction companies that aren't working fast enough to fix escalators, whatever it is, like, let's figure out a way so that we, the system, and we, the people who use the system, can come together in a meaningful way to address things that, like, Bart doesn't want to be fielding your complaints all day, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Like, so let's try and eliminate that burden for them. And you don't want to be complaining about Bart because all you're doing is trying to get to and from work. Like, what? That's a fundamental thing. You're trying to put food, you know, food on your family, as President Bush would say.
Food on your
So like, how can you lower that bar so that taking public transportation is not the biggest headache that you have in your day? Like, it should be, you know, those TPS reports or whatever the hell you're doing.
I really, really, really want to vote to give Bart a shit ton of money. I can't Same. Wait until I get the chance to do that someday. It's really exciting to me.
It's good to have dreams, Liam.
It is good to have dreams, you know? I really just want to...
Is there any, like, petition out there?
I don't know. I want someone to really just tax the shit out of me. That's what I'm really looking for.
Hippie.
Tax the 1%.
No, I think it's interesting that we came in here to talk about writing on the web and ended up talking about, you know, taking action based on talking with people to make the world a better place. I like that we've taken this in a holistic direction.
What you're saying is I have ruined the show?
No, I think the show is less ruined than usual.
Yeah, remarkably unruined today.
Remarkably unruined, yes. Nearly untouched. Near mint condition. I tried buying... I'm looking at used records right now.
What?
I'm
Why?
Looking at the word... Because I need to buy a
not
copy.
Literally right now. I want no, to let people know. Right like he's not.
It's like we're recording a show, Liam. No. God damn it.
Mike would be, though. Mike is over in the corner, like literally buying records, leaned way back in his chair. I need to find a copy of Cloudland by Pere Ubu. And I need it on vinyl. And it turns out you can't stream it anywhere or even buy it on iTunes. It's just not possible. I don't know what the hell.
They're from Cleveland. That's all I know.
Pere Ubu is?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. Huh. Their singer is named Dave Thomas, which is the same as that Wendy's guy.
It is.
Yep. Not the same guy, though, although I would love that.
Wait, I know a bunch about Dave Thomas because they made us watch a movie on him in high school.
Wait, the Why? Wendy's guy?
Yeah.
Square Burgers?
Did you go to torture high school?
Kind of. Wait, I'm getting confused. Like, maybe I don't actually know true things about him because I think he was one of the...
Beatles?
He was involved with Walmart in some way. Like, he was, like, an exec on the Walmart board or someone on Walmart helped found Wendy's. Like,
did you grow
some...
up in Arkansas?
No, I didn't.
All right.
Everything you say about your high school experience sounds fascinating.
Really? I don't talk about high school much.
You've talked about it.
I talk about college a lot. College was good.
You do talk a lot about college.
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah. I didn't do that.
It was like sober college.
Sober college? High school was?
Yeah, high school.
Huh.
With more academic decathlon.
What is academic decathlon?
Okay, so after school, you study all these extra
Settle
classes.
In, folks.
And so you get this big, huge binder of all these topics, and it's like an annual thing. So they choose like a history topic and a math topic and a music topic, and you get a CD, and you do all this extra studying on top of school. And then on the weekend, you go and compete against other schools about how much extra stuff you studied. And there's a thing called Super Quiz where you get down on the basketball court and they like ask you a question on the thing and you have to fill it in on a Scantron and then someone grades it right there. And if you're the best team, you get medals. So I have like a fuck ton of academic decathlon medals at my parents' house right now.
Wow.
Can I endorse you on LinkedIn for this?
Yeah, Acadec.
Okay.
Acadec. Really? It's got Acadec. Oh, gosh.
So it's like if your school studying wasn't enough, you could take on extracurricular studying. I wish I knew all the stuff I knew about Lewis and Clark. Wait, I've like forgotten everything about Lewis and Clark.
So the academic decathlon, that stuff did not stay with you?
No, it didn't. Nope.
I feel like I only graduated high school because they wanted me to stop going to high school. And that was the best way of them being able to do that. They just wanted me to not go there anymore.
Please stop.
Eventually they let me leave.
That would work.
Yeah, it did. I left. I never came back.
I went to an all-boys Catholic high school.
You did?
You did.
Learning things.
Let's talk more about this.
Yeah.
In Florida?
Yep.
Floridian all-boys Catholic high school. Wow. Wow. I'm just taking a second.
Stay tuned for part two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Contextualize what I know about you in light of this new information.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Hence my love of Soundgarden. I don't know.
Oh, God.
Well, okay, then.
Okay, so robots, Liam.
What about robots?
What kind of robot are you building?
I'm building a robot arm.
To do what?
To, I don't know, have a robot arm.
Don't you know about Liam's third arm?
I'm learning now.
I just want a robot arm. I'm thinking about... I want to do some weird shit with it. I want to control it with JavaScript and make it do dumb stuff. I'm excited about it. I just want to build shit.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's kind of nice.
If you need a screechy box, I made a little synth.
What's a screechy box?
It's when I call my little synth I built.
Oh, you built a synth,
yeah,
didn't you?
Yeah, I got one of those Technology Will Save Us kits, and I made a synth one day.
My God, this is a nerdy show today.
Yeah. It's cool. It's cool, though. I like
it. It's cool. That's really neat. I would really like to build a synth. I'm building a software synth.
Oh, cool.
It's exciting.
How are you doing that?
Do you guys still need me here?
Yeah, okay. Well, you know, you can hang out.
Yeah. Drink our tap water.
This is Liam and Steph time.
I like it.
Okay.
Yeah.
How you doing, Seven?
I'm doing great.
Okay.
Tell me about your synth.
Oh, it's just like a little kit, and they have these instructions, and it's like a... what's it called? A breadboard and then a bunch of different wires, and you can make a bunch of different synths. So I made the Atari one, and then you just have all these knobs and you adjust it, and it sounds like video game sounds. It's really cool. It takes like 30 minutes to build.
Whoa.
Yeah, it's like $50.
I'm subscribed to a few podcasts. One of them is like a... Yes, actually.
Oh, yay.
Both iterations, like when it was in iTunes and when it wasn't in iTunes or whatever. Like,
it's maybe back in iTunes for some people.
I think it works fine. I used to be a $5 fan, for Christ's sake.
Oh, so are you going to give us $5?
I left it in the swear jar.
Yeah.
One of the podcasts I'm subscribed to is like a song of the day where it just shoves some new music in your ear hole. And the last week I've heard two different artists using old like Atari and console game sounds to build entire songs out of.
Oh.
And it's been this fascinating like little rabbit hole that I've like, who else is doing this? Like,
chiptunes.
It's so cool. So
amazing.
I think you should build some of that kind of stuff into your synth making. Like you have a whole new career in front of you.
So I'm going to record some synth sounds that I make and then I'll play ukulele over it.
Oh my God. You're
Talk about
be so rich.
Niche marketing.
Yeah.
You're going to be on Boing Boing.
I'm going to be more hipster than Zooey Deschanel.
She's really slowing down, I feel like.
Yeah.
I haven't seen her lately. What's Zooey up to?
Wait, she had a kid. She had a kid recently.
What?
Yeah, she had a baby hipster.
That'll do it.
This is Steven.
That was
a new generation of hipsters.
I went to see live music last week. It almost killed me.
I saw live music.
I didn't.
I saw Father John Misty last week. Amazing. Such a good show.
So how long have you been in the cult?
It's a cult now?
It sounds like. It really does sound
it,
like
it. It really does, yeah.
And he's got like a long beard. And... Oof.
I thought he was creepy in pictures, and then I saw him, and I was like, no, I like him.
That's just how cults work.
That is pretty much how cults work.
So I have a painted Father John Misty over my bed now. Is that weird?
The first time I saw him was at Outside Lands a few years ago. I'll leave my review for another forum.
Please. Wow. Excited to hear it. Do we have any closing remarks? I feel like we've gotten to a good place. We had a kind and open and genuine conversation about writing on the web and how we can make our world a better place. We talked about music a little bit about cults. I think that's...
Robots.
It's a really well-rounded episode.
It was a very well-rounded episode. I feel calm and centered. And what's next for you, Stephen Fox?
I'm going to go to work.
Yeah?
Oh, nice.
Yeah. Great.
What's for lunch today?
It's a good question.
You don't know?
I don't.
Okay. Well, be sure to... We'll put it in show notes.
I'll probably tweet it.
So. We don't have show notes.
We can text Amy and ask.
Dan, if people wanted to find show notes...
Well, Merlin, they go to 5x5. I'm not going to do that. We don't actually have this.
No.
Tweet about it.
I just write a sentence about what we talked about. I don't know. I mean, I'm just happy if I remember what we talked about. And I'm like, good enough.
I never know. I'm going to lose all memory of this as soon as we step out that door.
Yeah.
It's like, Steven's here. What?
It's funny because sometimes people tweet quotes of things I've said on this show. And I'm like, did I say that?
Yeah,
that sounds like me, but...
This podcast is destroying our brains, ladies and gentlemen. It's bad. It's just leaking spinal fluid out my ears.
Liam is just laying on the ground now, rocking himself.
That's normal.
Yeah.
That's regular. It's Tuesday. No, I think that'll do it.
Yeah. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
It was fun to talk to you.
I'm glad it's not sweaty in here like it used to be.
No, this is a very cool, dank cavern.
I am disappointed. I will say this. Okay. I'm disappointed that we never got to eat cereal for money on this podcast. Oh. I hear that's a thing now.
You think it's a thing?
Yeah.
All right.
What are you doing tomorrow morning?
I know some people have done that. See, I can't. Oh, God. Cereal noises into a microphone. That just. Okay. Okay.
What would be the worst food to eat on a microphone? Thinking any? Baby carrots.
I mean, macaroni and cheese.
I'm not even eating and I can hear.
Yeah. No. It's bad. We're done. I'm taking the headphones off. Everyone's fired. Oh, God. No, I hate this so much. Ah. It's like the opposite of ASMR.
One.
You think? That's pretty weird.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. That's why I looked at my phone. Sorry.
That's okay.
No, it's okay. Go for it.
Mike's usually on his phone the whole time.
I feel safe saying all this because I don't think he listens to the podcast.
No, he doesn't listen to the podcast. Of course he doesn't listen to the podcast.